Today on The Breakdown, it's a battle of mosts. That's right. This is the most requested hand currently. This is the most watched poker slash reality show on YouTube currently. This is the most interesting hand played between Federholtz and Maria Ho currently. Also, Donnie Most, who was Potsy in Happy Days. Don't forget about him. And mostly, which Newt said that time to Ripley in that movie about the aliens. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Mostly. She said it with a little weird accent, which she didn't have the rest of the movie. All that and more on The Breakdown with Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
Hey. First time.
Do you know names of all of the like one-hit wonder actors who acted on Happy Days for some reason?
No, but I know Donnie Most because that's an incredible name.
Is it?
Is it not an incredible? Think about it like it's the 80s and the 70s. Your name is Donnie
that,
Most.
If it's the 80s.
Yeah, and you're and by the way, it's for a show that takes place in the 50s. It's set in the 50s. Donnie Most is the perfect 50s name. You're a game show host in the 50s if your name is Donnie Most, for sure. You're like, come on down. It's a car made of. Made of rubber bands.
Made of rubber bands.
Made of rubber bands. You can't drive it, but you can admire it. Welcome to the 50s.
This took a strange turn.
A lot of people don't have rights in this country.
The rubber.
It's the 50s.
Everything you've said so far, yeah. I can get the thread and it can touch different parts of it, I understand, except for the rubber band car. I don't really get why there's a rubber band car.
It's a piece of art. You wouldn't.
The 50s? Says yeah. Rubber band car to you.
Okay.
What about a game show says rubber band car?
Well, those are two different questions.
To you.
Those are two different questions.
I want answers to both questions.
Number one, the 50s. Think technology was lower fi, so rubber band car. That's answer number one. Answer number two to your
okay,
second
that's
question.
An
game show, they gave away stuff if you won. Right? So sometimes they gave away cars. Sometimes they gave away things that seemed like they were cars and turns out they weren't. Like it was like a trick. They did that on Let's Make a Deal all the time where you'd like pick the curtain and it would be like an old smelly goat and its feces. Stuff like that, you know? So rubber band car, let's go. Also, maybe some people would appreciate it because think about the craftsmanship that would have to go into making a fucking rubber band car.
Well, it depends. I mean, you just called it a rubber band car. Yeah. Are the producers of the show calling it a rubber band car and it could really look like a big rubber band turd? Or is it like anybody in the audience could be like, that looks exactly like a car. I can't even tell that it's made of rubber bands.
I mean, it's unpainted, of course. They didn't have
Why
that
wouldn't you paint the...
You can't paint rubber bands in the 50s. I think it was a Joseph McCarthy thing.
There's the big red scare.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
You couldn't tell. If you were colorblind and were far away, you would think that was a Ford fucking Oldsmobile or whatever.
A Ford Oldsmobile?
Yeah, you know what I mean. Yeah. It was a Honda. It was a Honda Pontiac.
Chevrolet.
Yeah. Did they have Japanese cars in the 50s? I don't think they did.
No.
There were no cars anywhere but in the United States, right?
No, I don't think there was a country besides the United States.
Yeah, I think that's right.
By then.
And that's why the game shows were so popular.
Right. Exactly. That makes sense.
Let's make a deal. The Monty Hall problem. It all stems from this one flowering rose.
I'm pretty sure everybody on Earth besides Americans up until 1955 was classified as like undiscovered inhabitants of their lands who don't have any technology and are just like throwing rocks.
It's essentially those people from World War II. And I know this is sort of going to immediately contradict what you said, but roll with it.
Okay, just forget about the thing.
No. Remember the thing. The Japanese soldiers who were on like the island, but then they ended up being there for like 30, 40 years and thought the war was still going on because, you know, no technology. And so now they've devolved into a Lord of the Flies pig society.
Right.
and everyone's wearing just different pig parts and paraphernalia.
It's all pigs. There's a lot of pigs on the island.
It's all pigs. Yeah. So that's what everyone was sort of like seen as, at least from the U.S. And that's a harsh truth, but a real truth.
It's a good history lesson. Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah. And you can't know where you're going unless you know where you've been, Grant.
All right. Let's sharpen our gaze a little bit towards the hand that we're going to talk about.
Oh, that was like an old school poker guy's beginning right there,
huh? Yeah.
We didn't do it for 25 minutes.
No.
But that felt great. We're doing that more from here on out. I promise.
Okay, relax. So this hand was suggested by a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Casper, probably Casper Kwok. Chris Jones, Otto von Buelo. A person who's calling themselves Al Capone, all punny-like, but I know it's Mark Testart. I know the picture Testart. If you're trying to hide, you shouldn't have used the same picture Testart.
What if he didn't want to be called out and be known?
Then he shouldn't have used the same picture. Yeah. He's supposed to be a lawyer from Australia.
Oh, because lawyers are good at pictures?
Maybe not in Australia.
Maybe not.
Maybe because the toilets flow backwards, which I've heard was a myth. And really? Not actually true. Yeah,
I've been in Australia and I don't remember, which means it probably was a myth because I think I would have remembered that.
Would you?
I don't know.
You're like one of the least observant people I know.
I am. That is accurate.
Yeah,
for sure. Now, quick question about Australia.
Yeah.
It used to be a haven for criminals because that's like where they were sent, right? Back in the day.
If you're talking about the white inhabitants, yeah.
Right. That is exactly. Thank you for correcting me on that.
Yeah.
Okay. So all the white people were criminals.
Yeah.
So would it mean being a lawyer, like they're just dying for lawyers at all times now? Or is it too late? And has everyone sort of melded into more normal society? And there's just a normal amount of crime.
What do you think?
I'm going to say there's no way it's a normal amount of crime. It's got to be worse. They need a lot of lawyers. Thank you. Testart is just, you know, out of his eyeballs with cases.
He's sure Australians love that joke. Love
they
it.
They must hear that shit all the time about criminals. It must be so old and boring.
It must be really, really annoying.
It's like, yeah. Although what's even worse for them than hearing that is the shrimp on the Barbie line, which people have been saying for a solid 50 years and hasn't been interesting or funny for a solid 50 years. So yeah. I'm with you guys on that one, Australians. Finally, we're on the same side about something. We did it.
Nah, you don't really agree. One more suggester, Rising Sky.
You didn't say it correctly, though.
Rising Sky?
Underscore.
Underscore.
There's an underscore after the Y.
Okay, Rising Sky, which...
I think it's just a pause, though. It's Rising Sky. And then we're done with the name.
Which sounds very much like a very patriotic American movie about like a communist uprising, which there is a movie. What was that movie? Called that's
are,
like
are you talking about Red Dawn?
Yeah, that one.
Okay.
It's like a Red Dawn ripoff.
There's actually a movie called Rising Sun, but that's about two American cops who go to Japan to solve a murder. Wesley Snipes, you know, what are you gonna do? Based on a Michael Crichton book.
Snipes.
Yeah.
Tax evasion.
Sean Connery, actually, as well.
Connery?
He's dead.
I forgot that he was dead.
Thanks have to. Now you're experiencing it all over again, like the first time you heard. Do you need Should we?
No, it's okay.
Pause the...
No, I just...
We're pausing.
I'm just having my favorite Sean Connery memory.
We're just going to pause and edit it out so you can have your time of mourning.
No, okay. I'm going to vocally have my favorite Sean Connery memory.
Even better.
Which is that he turned down The Matrix to do The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yes. But you know why he turned down The Matrix?
Because he didn't understand it.
Because he didn't understand it at all.
Yeah.
I mean, that happens a lot, I think, to these older actors who don't know what the... But usually they say yes anyway.
To be fair, he turned down the part of the architect who's only in the second and third ones.
Oh, it wasn't to be Morpheus?
No.
Oh, well, who cares?
Yeah, then? and the things the architect said were fucking ridiculous.
It was like a three-minute scene. It's one three-minute scene. No, he was the lead of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Of course he should have done that.
Yeah.
That's the right decision. Now he's dead, though, so he probably...
Maybe he would have still been alive.
I mean, but he would have been doing Matrix sequels. Or
you know
not.
Who is alive? Fader Holtz, Maria Ho. Well, at the time at the time of the filming of this hand, at least we don't know current status of anybody except for the people in this room, which is me and Jonathan Levy.
That's correct,
and probably a couple bugs, but I can't see them right now. But it's just statistically, there's probably a couple bugs in here, right?
There's like two bugs, although there's really no bugs in the Pacific Northwest wherever I live. And there's two humans now. Each human of the two carry trillions upon trillions of life forms, you know.
We're not counting microscopic shit.
Okay, I'm just checking in.
I'm not interested in microscopic organisms, and I actually don't believe they exist because I can't see them.
Okay, good.
That's my philosophy.
No, I'm not going to fight you on that.
So we are in the Game of Gold.
Yes, the Game of Gold,
which I just finally started watching last night, and the reality showness of it is ridiculous, with like the smash zooms and the ridiculous dramatic music that they use in like other reality shows, but I think it's probably correct for this, for what they're trying to do, what they're trying to be.
I think it absolutely is. I've watched the whole thing. I think it's fabulous. I encourage everyone to watch it. It's just on YouTube, so you can just type in Game of Gold. You'll get to see it all for free. It's really high level production. It's some of the best players in the world, not just playing poker, but talking about the hands as they're happening. Not their own hands, usually, but other people's hands. That's part of the really interesting setup of this show, is they put these people into teams, and they sequester them away while they watch one of their teammates play in a sit-and-go, and then they talk about what their teammate is doing, because they can't help it, because that's what you do when you're playing. And Federer said later on, the cameras are really hard to see in the rooms. It's not that they were hidden, but they're super easy to forget about. They're like up on the ceilings and stuff. So they just didn't really notice them and just were having normal conversations. And that really comes out because they are not overly political when they're talking about these people's play, be it their teammates or other players, which I really appreciate.
Which is really cool. And I think maybe not for the majority of casual poker observers, maybe those are more interested in like how the game is going and who's got the most coins and whatever. Mm. But for the people who are interested in like this podcast, the best part of the show is the good players talking about other people play as it's happening.
1,000,000%.
Yeah.
1,000,000%. And also watching, and this is something you brought up from even episode one, watching really top-notch players disagree about what seems like fairly basic points that it's surprising that there would be a disagreement about, but then there is.
Yeah.
Vehement disagreements sometimes. Like you mentioned Daniel Negreanu and Jason Kuhn in the first episode have right. a big disagreement about Kevin Martin, whether he should shove his queen 10 suit and he's got like 12 blinds.
No, he's got more than that. It's more like 17 blinds.
17 blinds. Yeah. And is he under the gun? Do you
he's
know?
He's on the button, but there's, they're four-handed.
It's four-handed, yeah. Right. Okay. So, and Negreanu thinks there's no way he should do it and Kuhn thinks it's an auto shove.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that two of the best players in the world can disagree so much on something that feels like should have like a clear answer. And yet,
I think maybe
there isn't.
They It's not clear. They may agree if it were a more common format that they're used to, but the format, like the incentives are slightly different than what they're used to. So maybe they're on the fly making slightly different right. assessments than they would normally make. And that kind of puts a wrench in things.
Yeah. Like finishing fourth is way worse for everyone. Like it's your whole team, not just you. But the incentives do line up more or less. Like the better you do, the better your team does.
Yeah.
The worse you do, the worse your team does. So it's not too far off.
Right. But the shove fold stuff is really built into ICM. And the ICM here is different than anywhere else.
Yeah, but let's remember the way this whole game works, and maybe people don't know this, and this is important to talk about, and it's going to be important certainly for the hand we're about to talk about in depth, is this is a winner-take-all event. So we start with 16 players, but one player is going to get $456,000, and everyone else gets nada.
Yeah.
So ICM gets a little weird if we're starting to think about that in episode one, when there's still 16 players left. Like, we shouldn't really be thinking about ICM type stuff. Although I know a lot of players, and if you keep watching, you'll see this, do have lots of things where they take longer on certain decisions because they're thinking about they don't want to let their team down.
Right.
So it does add an interesting dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a really good show.
Yeah. Yeah. You should check it out. Anyway, let's get to the hand. So this is...
Oh, baby. Let's get to this hand.
You know, to be fair, if you haven't watched the show yet and you really don't if you really don't like spoilers about, like, who gets how far... This is going to come out, Jonathan, this is for you, about 3 weeks from now.
Okay.
When we're recording it. So people will have had more time to watch
good.
It. And, it's already all out. But if you don't want to know how things go near the end of the show or who's still there, you already know a little bit about that because of the title of this thing and stuff. Too bad. That's just how it goes. Then stop now. And, you've listened for long enough that we get credit, I think, on all the platforms. So
we're fine. I think even a second is good enough. If it's 3 weeks, even after we are recording this, that this is coming out, if you're into this, you should have probably seen it all by now.
Yeah.
It's possible that you're just discovering it now because you've been on, you're not on YouTube or whatever. You haven't been on social media much. I don't think it hurts that much to know what we're going to say, even though it will spoil some stuff. But it's not the value of the show really is what Grant was saying, which is listening to some of the top players in the world discuss other players, sometimes their teammates, sometimes not their teammates, sometimes their opponents, play hands and do it in a very casual way where they aren't really thinking about that this is going to be seen by all these people. It's
right.
very clear they're not thinking about that. And so it feels much more honest and... like sometimes you watch a football game, or I'll watch a football game, and someone like a ref will make a bad call, and they bring the rules expert on it, and he'll basically say, "No, that was a good call," and you don't really believe that they think that, because it seems so obvious that it isn't. You don't get any of that here. It's really great.
All right, anyway,
let's do this.
That's the disclaimer. Here we go.
Okay,
it's 30K, 60K. I think there's still five players left, and it is a winner take all format. So, you know, ICM is not really a factor here.
I don't think it is.
Because you got to win.
Got to win.
Fedor is under the gun. He's got 6.7 million, over 100 bigs, and two queens. Queen of spades, queen of hearts, raises to 130K. Kaina England, who is not known basically until now, until being on the Game of Gold, she was the MSPT player of the year 1 year.
Oh, was she?
Yeah, so she's like a mid-stakes quality grinder.
That is correct. Tournament, yeah. Mid-stakes tournament, excuse me, quality grinder. She's like friends with like Angela Jordanson and stuff like that.
Okay, so yeah, she knows what she's doing.
Oh, yeah. But she's also clearly not in the league of these guys.
She's not Jason Kuhn.
She knows that and they know
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. She's like, yeah, she's very nervous in the first episode. Like, yeah, she's not Jason Kuhn. She's not Jungle Man. She knows that. Yeah. Right.
This is a very tough table for her.
Yeah. Yeah. She moves in with Ace Four of Hearts for $1.6 million. Fine. Nothing wrong with that.
I mean, it seems completely fine since Fader's open to move in for it's a big shove, but especially her.
Yeah.
Like I would question if like Jungle Man or Maria Ho should do something like that for 24 blinds or whatever this is. It's about 23 blinds. But I think kind of 100% should be moving in.
It's also winner take all, right? So the ICM doesn't.
It's not matter. About ICM. It's just about it's a lot of blinds to put at risk.
Yeah.
We don't have to.
Yeah.
But I think she's supposed to up the variance here because she is, I think she would agree with this too. She's almost certainly the worst player at the table, right? It's her, I'm going to just mention all the players now. Her, Yo Viral, Josh Arie, Maria Ho, Federholtz, and Jungleman. The only people she could make a case for really is Josh Arie. And
yeah.
That's at least possible. That's it. And Josh Arie's got a million years of live experience.
He's got 12 million in earnings.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that was in that one event, that one time. But still, he's done quite well. He's recently won a bracelet or two this year, even. Yeah, it was Limit Hold'em. But still,
he's good at poker.
He's at least a very good poker player. She may know more technically than he does. So maybe she'd say, I'm the fifth best poker player at the table. I don't think she would think she was any better than that. That is clearly not a put down on her. Oh, my God, look at this lineup.
Right, of course. She's very good. But yeah, so she moves in. Yeah. There's also more value in the move in because at this stage, I don't know exactly when they're doing it. Sometimes they do small blind ante where it's the size of the small blind, not the big blind. It's big blind ante at this stage.
Yeah.
And so with five players, that makes the move in more valuable.
Yeah, that's true. Get an extra half a blind there.
Yeah. Anyway, she moves in with ace four of hearts.
It's probably not going to work.
It's not going to get through.
Queens.
It's not going to get through. Maria Ho is in the small blind. She has Fedder covered. 7.2 million.
Okay.
She has ace king off.
Yes.
I mean, it's a pretty clear just shove, right?
I mean, we don't... Oh, yeah, because kind of made it like 20-some-odd blinds,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, so any raise is a committing raise for Fedder at this point, right? We make it 3.3. That's half a stack.
Yeah.
We're never folding anyway. I think it's a standard shove, for sure. A standard four-bet, committing four-bet, whatever we want to call it. Yeah, shove.
Maria flats.
She thinks for a while in flats, by the way.
I have a theory.
I do, too. What's yours?
Maybe it's the same.
Let's find out.
She's recognizing the one player wins it all format and wants to play a high variance spot where she lets Fedor shove.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if he's going to shove weaker hands than ace-king for sure. And even if it's a flip, it's okay. It's not that bad of a situation when there's five players left. And if she ends up knocking out both players, which is a reasonable outcome that could happen with ace-king sometimes... she's going to be the massive favorite to win.
Right. Yeah, if she can induce Fedder shove here. Now, he has queen, so it's not as much of an... But, like, from his range...
Yeah.
That is... And she gets to win this pot. She's going to be, as you said, the massive chip leader. She also gets rid of Fedder Holtz, which is universally recognized by all players as the best player. Mm-hmm. All of them acknowledge that he's the best at this, right? Certainly in terms of sit and goes. All of them. So, she does. So, like, that is the one reason to do it, right, is to induce that. When you flat, what range do we have? Let's talk about the range.
I don't think it's going to be a fair discussion because I think you are immediately going to what an amateur would have, and I don't think that's what Maria would have.
Let's talk about what Fedder thinks Maria will have.
Well, Fedder thinks flats. Maria, that's beyond me. I know exactly what an amateur would have.
Go ahead.
Which is easy. It's like... Depends on how loose they are, but it's like somewhere between eights and jacks, and then like ace-queen suited is like all of it. Maybe ace-jack suited sometimes.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
We're five-handed, ace jack 24 blinds you can get shoved on. Probably she, I would think.
This is the amateur. Yeah.
Right.
And that's why I said depends on how loose they are.
Okay, well, what do you think Maria's flatting range is then, rather than an amateur? How do you think it changes? Obviously, she has ace-king here, but go on.
I don't think she's going to have any weaker hands than the amateur would have, but I think she's going to have some stronger hands.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
I think she can have hands as strong as aces and kings here.
Yes.
Right? Because if she has aces or kings, why would she want to yuck her yum? You know what I mean? Like, pushing Fetter out doesn't do a lot for her. Like, no. She wants the action badly if she has aces or kings. So flatting's the only move. Not the only move, but it sets up a move where Fetter could decide to shove, at least. I think she still has, like you said, eights and nines and tens and jacks. I think she probably flats with those hands, too. Mm-hmm. But she might be flatting with her entire range. Except this is like the one hand you think she might not flat with, right? Like,
just because it wants the protection?
It wants the protection so bad. And maybe we could even come up with a few. She could decide to just play some of the more middling pocket pairs slightly more aggressively too, meaning like nine cents jacks.
Yeah, just to get rid of Fader.
Yeah, just like instead of like encouraging him to call, where they're the two big stacks at the table. It still has a bunch of his chips, but he can call if he wants. And now, is she on the button?
She's a small blind.
She's a small blind. Okay. So then he gets to be in position against her too. Like, it's not going to be easy to play with jacks if we flat.
I honestly think I like the flat. And I think I like it.
Oh, yeah.
I like the, like, whole range flat idea because the most common outcome is Fader just folds. And
mostly.
We're heads up.
It doesn't matter anyway.
With Kaina. And that's fine. But we get all in against Fader a lot more frequently by flatting than by shoving. And I don't think protection is very valuable at this stage of a winner take all. So I'd rather get all in than protect.
Okay, fair enough. I think that's reasonable. I'm just thinking, like, if we were to shove here, Fetter's probably calling with ace-king anyway, right? Because of the all-in.
Yes.
Because of the winner-take-all.
And he's calling with queens.
Oh, of course he's calling with queens. But I'm thinking, like, we can't even get the same hand to fold. Because if we could get ace-king to fold, moving in has a lot more value.
Oh, never.
But it's going to call.
Yeah.
Because we might move in with ace-queen, and it also just can't care. It's a winner-take-all. You've got to take a flip sometimes where you're almost certainly flipping, which we would be here.
I think a question we have to ask, I guess, is what is more likely for a Fader to do with ace-queen? To call if Maria shoves or to shove over the top of Maria's flat?
I'm a little bit hamstrung by knowing what Fader actually does in this hand.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to say it so everyone's part of this conversation. So Fader flats with queens here.
Yeah.
Which is a whole discussion we need to have anyway.
Yeah.
But I would, because he does that, it leads me to think he is assigning this stronger range to Maria than he otherwise might, right? Than I might have thought.
Right, his flat doesn't have the same value as Maria's. He can't induce a preflop shove because he's closing the action.
Right. But he's deciding, like, I don't know if I want to get it all in with queens here.
Yeah.
Like, Maria just put out if Maria is call folding, which she really might be doing with pocket eights or pocket nines, or even pocket tens, that's incredibly valuable to just pick up those chips. Right now. She just put $2.4 million out there. He's going to be the chip leader.
Yeah.
If he just gets her to fold. And of course, he has to hold against Kaina too. But even if not, he ends up breaking even against Kaina because he gets some of Maria's chips. It's really fascinating to me that he flats with the queens and makes me think he's giving her very different kinds of ranges than maybe he thinks she doesn't have a hand like eights. Or nines at all.
It could be that he thinks she does.
Yeah.
And that he is...
just doing well against that?
Yeah, and he's... Well, partially that. He might think that she has a lot of eights, nines, tens, jacks, which is like the amateur range here. And, you know, it's the pro range too, but the pro range is just more expansive. And that there are some flops where he gets it all. And that there are no pre-flops where he gets it all.
That's probably true. Well, if she has jacks, maybe.
Okay, but there's...
Maybe ace-king. But fair enough.
Yeah.
I will say this, too. There's a second piece, which is they're creating a dry side pot here, right?
Yes.
Kind of shoves Maria, just calls. If he just calls, too, he gets to be in position. And Maria's not ever going to bluff the dry side pot.
There's no value
in it. Now, she also has a hand, very clearly, right? But she's not going to overplay her hand here. She doesn't need to.
Right.
So he gets an extra layer of protection that you wouldn't get because Kaina's all in here.
Yeah.
And someone has to win a showdown against her range. So he gets that piece too. Mm-hmm. So that maybe makes it a little easier to say, yes, I'm just going to call here. By the way, it's definitely an under-rep spot. He could absolutely shove Queens here. That wouldn't be weird, right? Like, if he shoved Queens, I wouldn't have thought anything of it.
No, that'd be
wrong. I was expecting him to shove Queens. After she flats, which I was already surprised about, I'm like, well, now he's going to shove, she's going to call, we're going to see this big flip. But instead, they both just flat.
Yeah.
Especially where you have to win all the chips, that was very surprising to me.
I get Maria's.
I get hers,
too. Once we talked about it, I get it.
Because she's trying to play the biggest pot possible.
Yeah.
Right? And any kind of a raise right now is almost always going to knock Federer.
Yeah.
And so maybe sometimes she gets the shove from it.
Right. So I think that's her plan.
Yep.
I think my best explanation of Federer's is what I said, where I think he thinks there's a lot of hands that Maria has that he's getting no more out of her preflop, and he's also trying to maximize value in this spot. And there are some flops against nines and tens where he gets it all.
Yep. And he's willing to take the risk of like an ace flopping, and he's like, fuck.
Yeah.
But also, Maria still is going to play pretty straightforward because there's no bluffing.
Yep.
Right? She still has to be kind of. So if Maria has, whatever, two eights, and it's an ace four flop, it's just probably going to check all the way down a lot, right? Maybe Federer puts in a tiny value bet, but Maria's unlikely to turn her ace into a bluff because there's not a lot of value in knocking out Federer since she also has to beat Kaina.
Yep.
So that makes it a little bit easier and better to go for it. And by go for it, I mean flatting here rather than just shoving.
Interesting stuff so far.
Very fucking interesting. It's going to stay really interesting is what I'm going to say.
As a side note, how many more frustrating feelings are there in poker than getting bluffed out of a dry side pot by a person who doesn't know what they're doing?
It is slightly infuriating at a minimum.
Yeah.
It can be pretty rough. It also sucks by someone who does know what's going on, which I've had that happen to
me,
too.
Well, then they don't know what's going on.
I had one guy do it once. He's like, I wanted to make a point. And I was like, well, I folded top pair. I guess you made a point. I don't know.
What was the point?
The point was, you know, we're supposed to check it down now, bro. He was annoyed that I bet my top pair. And I still remember this. I bet like a normal amount, and he went all in for like 11 times the pot. And I was like, I actually thought about it.
It wasn't a dry side pot then.
Well, because I bet.
Yeah.
Correct. But compared to the pot, it was pretty small. You know what I mean? It wasn't worth winning. The risk reward was insane. And no good player would ever really do that, you know?
So, well,
but he understood that it was a dry side pot. He just wanted to make a point. Don't fucking do that.
He's like, the point is we have to collude more.
That was his point. To me, what I took from it was call next time he does that.
Yeah.
If he ever does it again, just call and don't worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. Well,
at least he got your chips.
His name is Brian.
He beat you.
He beat me that hand.
He got you.
He did.
He's better than you, and I respect him more than I respect you.
Me too.
Good.
Me too.
He has actual balls.
Okay, let's go.
All right. So the pot is 4.8 million.
Yes.
And that makes things a little tricky because the effective stack between Maria and Fedor is 5.1 million of Fedor.
I mean, Maria's in kind of a good spot here, right? Because she should mostly be able to get it in. Unless she flops top pair and Federer flops a set, she should be able to get it in. If they get it all in, she should be in great shape, right?
Most of the time.
She's generally not going to put a lot of chips in here with ace high because she wouldn't assume Federer's going to be bluffing.
I mean, there's like some ace Broadway flops where he makes two pair and she makes top pair and a gut shot or whatever.
There are a few.
Yeah.
Ace jack 10 or whatever, but not too many. But he's just folding jack 10, by the way, to the shove anyway.
But he could have ace jack or ace.
He could have ace jack suited.
Yeah. You could have ace 10 suited.
He might even fold ace jack suited, honestly.
Pre?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
You know?
He's in position against Maria.
They look at the stack to pot, and he's often dominated. He's dominated
I think you almost always overestimate how much people are folding based on stack to pot, including pros, like really good pros.
Well, I don't, so there you go.
Yep. I guess we'll never know. Except that I just know that I'm right.
Well, you believe you're right. I know that. But that's true with you about a lot of things.
And I'm usually right. Anyway. 5.1 is Fedor's effective stack.
Okay.
It's one of those flops.
It is.
Kaina is fucked. It's queen, jack, eight, all diamonds. She's done. It's over. Fedor flops top set, and Maria flops the ace of diamonds. So she's got the nut flush draw and Broadway draw.
I mean, it's an insane flop.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine. When that flop came out, I was like, well, they're just going to get all in on the flop, I guess, mostly. Because, like, Maria should be happy to put a lot of chips in here with fold equity, right?
Yeah.
You'd expect Federer wouldn't just shove if she checked him. She should have a very clean check raise all in if she wanted to play it that way, right? And although Federer isn't always necessarily going to bet, he doesn't have the lead actually in the hand. So actually, but he might, if he bets, she can check raise all in, or she could just start betting herself.
Yeah.
But either way, that would be, if I was Maria, that would be what I would be thinking about. I'd be like, how can I put in the last big bet, combine my equity with my fold equity, and be in a great spot? That's what I'd be thinking about.
Okay, so she checks.
Yes.
Everything's going according to
so
plan.
So far, so good.
This is part of why I think you overestimate people's assumptions yeah. on the SPR, because Federer's going to bet 600K into 4.8 million.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
And you see this type of stuff out of top players when stacks are like this. Like, yeah. they do adjust for yeah. SPR.
Yeah.
And I think that's one way to make it so you can see more flops.
Yeah.
So I think
it's really an incredible.
You've already been.
It's so tiny.
Bamboozled. You've been bamboozled.
But yeah. Okay, so Federer bets 600K. Well,
with top set. Yeah.
Yeah, with top set.
Let's Maria can still just shove.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's you know, he's got less than a pot.
Yeah.
Back. It's a very clean shove.
Maria calls.
I feel like we need to talk about this.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand the bet. I think Federer is, yeah. you know, trying to be balanced. This is probably what he would normally bet if he were to bet. He's always going
when
to have.
Betting, yeah.
Yeah, but he always has a hand of some type.
Yeah.
Because it's a dry side pot.
He always has a hand. He's betting tiny because of the monochrome nature of the board. I think that's what's going on.
And because of the SPR.
Yes. Agreed. And the SPR.
I don't exactly know why Maria is calling when another diamond coming is not going to get her paid.
Exactly. I have a real concern about that. Also, I have a slight concern. Federer, I guess, just doesn't have ace-king almost ever, right? Because Federer's probably just shoving that.
You would think, yeah.
I would think. Now, I would have thought Maria was shoving, too.
Yeah.
But I would also think Federer closing the action is shoving.
Yeah.
So I don't have to worry about that. Federer could have a hand like king-queen and be betting here just for protection.
Mm-hmm.
And if we shove, is he calling?
Probably not.
Probably not. So that's...
If he has the king of diamonds, he is.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Either way, though, it's a good outcome. If we get all the chips now against king-queen, it's fine.
Yeah.
We're probably a slight favorite. And we want to be in a big flip for all the chips to see if we can win this $456,000. Or he folds, and we get to be heads up against Kaina. We have the ace-king high, which might be good against her. It turns out it is. And we got all the outs in the world. And we have no more chips on the line against Federer. And we've given ourselves an amazing price to hit this because we're getting, you know, we put in a third of the pot and we are, you know, we're going to be reasonable favorites to improve strongly.
I think we're probably a dog against King Queen. Slight dog, but that's fine.
Have to look it up.
Yeah.
It's close.
Yeah, anyway, I think the reason not to shove that maybe is looming large in Maria's head is what we've been talking about. It was a dry side pot. Federer's
yes.
never betting two black nines here.
Never.
Right? Like so the fold equity is not nearly as much there as it usually is. Right?
Yeah.
Is there any fold equity?
I gotta believe there's some.
Against King Queen specifically, we might have fold equity.
Is Federer ever betting a jack here? Let's say he has ace jack suited. It's reasonable to bet that, isn't it? You could bet 600K once. You don't have to keep betting.
I guess
with the three diamonds?
The only question is, are you folding out nines or tens with a diamond if you do that? If the answer is no, then there's no point.
I mean, the point is to charge them to get there instead of
charge them 600K.
Yeah, charge them 10 blinds.
Yeah.
Rather than have it just be free.
Is there value in that?
Why are we betting King Queen if we're then?
Yeah. Well, we block set of queens. That's nice.
That is nice.
We block ace queen.
If we have the king of diamonds, we're also building a pot yeah. a little bit for a potential flush.
Yeah.
That's a reason. If we have the king of diamonds. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we're not betting king queen. I don't know.
If we're not betting king queen, but we do bet. If Maria's sitting there thinking, like, I don't think he's just going to bet top pair here.
Yeah.
Because maybe also the nature of the board is such where she's like, I can absolutely have jacks. How can he bet like even ace queen?
Right.
Now he only bet 600K into 4.8 million, but it still is 10 blinds. But it's only six. I mean,
she could probably have eights too, we think. That might be the bottom of her preflop range, and that's a set.
Yeah, I guess she can have eights. I'm not sure if she's calling with eights or not.
Yeah, it's close.
Feels like nines for sure she yeah. is. So it's right there. Yeah. So if she's sitting there with pocket eights, let's give her pocket eights. Now she's like, well, Federer can have jacks. Federer can have queens. She might assume he's four betting with those at least some of the time pre, but clearly not all the time. We see that, and maybe she can know that too.
There's a small chance she would check shove nines or tens with a diamond, by the way, because that's a straight flush draw and a pair.
Feels incredibly reckless to do when he decides to bet, and now all you're winning is the 600K that's out there for the most part. Like, you're like all that stuff in the middle, you have to be kind of too. That's why, that's the nature of the setup, right?
Yeah, but she's not folding those hands, at least.
She's definitely, I think she's just check calling them and seeing what comes.
Yeah.
That feels like makes way more sense to me than shoving that. This hand, though, like you said, if a diamond comes, we assume action is mostly going to be killed.
Yep, that's a big problem.
Maybe a 10, we get an offsuit 10, so we got three outs to like good action, because it's hard to put us on ace king. Really, really hard.
Yeah.
So that's good. But most of our outs are diamonds. They're not tens.
Yep.
By the way, an ace or a king, which would not save us here, we don't know that, right?
Yeah.
Might save us. And those are also kind of action-killing cards if it beats Fader, right? He's not going to keep firing away. If he has ace-queen and a king comes off, he's not just going to bet again.
Right.
Once we check call, right?
Yeah.
Because we could have king-queen, we can have king-jack. No, we can't really. Nah. We can't have either one of those, actually. I take all that back. So actually, maybe he's probably going to check just to like preserve the just to stack, stack control. Pot control, whatever you want to call it.
Stack control, no, stack that's control. What people call
it. It's basically the same thing. Yeah. Come on, more or less, sort of. Anyway, so I am really surprised she doesn't shove here.
I think
what I'm getting to.
If there is a time, I'm going to put it this way. I agree, but if there is a time to not shove this hand, this might be it.
Because he may not be betting one pair.
Right. Because of multiple reasons. The dry side pot means that he might not even be betting one pair, and his bet was so small that the fold equity is less valuable.
Right. But now we know we have fold equity, which is kind of great.
We don't know we have fold equity. We're not sure that he's folding anything that he bets. He might.
Oh, okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
I have to believe he's folding some things that he bets. He's Federholtz. There's no way every time he bets, he's never folding against Maria Ho. That's crazy.
What hands does he bet folding, do you think?
He might have. Could he have ace king? No, he can't because we have this exact hand. But if he had ace king with the ace of diamonds, God, it's so hard for him to have that hand.
He would never fold. Not with a winner take all.
There's no chance he would fold.
No.
No fucking chance. And he can't have ace 10. Can't really have ace. It's hard. I'm trying to give him the ace of diamonds, but it's hard to give him the ace of diamonds.
You can't really.
Yeah.
And he's playing with the ace of diamonds. Obviously, he's not folding that.
No, it can't fold. He will hate. He will not love it and call is what he will do. For sure.
Yeah. He'll be like, I might just have diamond outs, but whatever.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah. 456K or zero anyway. Like, let's try and win this whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. He would do that. He's the guy who called when he had two tens and it went open. Shove. They're like four left in the 100K or whatever. Shove. He calls with the two tens and Rick Solomon goes all in from the big blind for a lot for all of Federer's stack too. I think it was a super high rollerball, actually. So it was like 300K buy-in. And Rick Solomon turns over one of his cards and flashes
the ace.
It
was a World Series.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. And it was a humongous spot.
Yeah.
He flashes the ace, sort of accidentally, I think, because he's, I don't know, because he's Rick Solomon.
We did that hand many years ago.
And Fader decides to call with the two tens, knowing it's either ace king or it's aces, and there's more combos of ace king,
right.
And it's still a flip, but let's go.
Yeah.
So for sure he's calling is what I'm getting to with like ace queen with the ace of diamonds, 1,000,000%.
So, I mean, she might literally not have fold equity in this spot, even though it's Fader Holtz.
Okay, if we believe we have no fold equity, let's still think about, there's value to the shove, I think, and here's what it is. If we miss the turn, if we brick the turn, we're out of position. If we check, he's got less than a pot size bet left. We may just get blown off this hand and not get to see the river. And a huge amount of our equity goes up in smoke. If we shove, we get to see both turn and river.
This is so important. What Fader's range actually is so important.
I agree.
Because it's possible that his range is inclusive only of hands that mean that we only have diamond outs.
Right.
Like, so that
we're. And 10 outs, of course.
And we're getting called 100%.
And 10s.
Yeah, and 10s. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Sure.
So we have a combo draw.
We have 12 outs, yeah. But it's like if we're getting called 100% of the time, and we have maximum 12 outs 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Probably sometimes a bit fewer because he'll have a diamond somehow. Maybe not. He'll have two diamonds sometimes, perhaps. Is it possible?
I mean, it's ace, queen.
No, he'd have to have.
Sorry. Queen, jack, eight. He has
to have
king,
the straight,
10 of diamonds.
King, 10 or 9, 10.
And have decided to call, which he's not going to do. He's just folding those hands.
Probably.
Pre.
So yeah, I guess he has no flushes.
No.
That's nice that he has no flushes.
He could have king-king with the king of diamonds. No, but he's shoving that pre, or he's raising, re-raising pre almost
maybe
always.
He called with queens.
You know what? He did call with queens.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what I'm... You're right. You're right. It's hard to know.
Point being that against those hands, we have the 12 outs.
Yeah.
And they mostly have redraws against us also. So it's like not an ideal spot percentage-wise. And if we literally have no fold equity, that's not worth accounting, then...
We are getting, we're still getting the right price to jam even without fold equity, but not, but just barely.
Right. But we still have a, like, I know we're trying to win this thing, but if we literally have no fold equity and we have 12 outs against a hand with redraws,
yeah,
it might be better to call and sometimes have to fold the turn and we still have a playable stack, a very playable stack.
Okay. I just want to bring up again, though, the other important piece to this,
which we're never getting paid.
We're never getting paid.
I know.
When the diamond comes.
I know. I think that that's probably less important than all those other things.
I don't know. I don't know. Like, part of the reason why we flatted this, in theory, was to try and get it all.
Yeah, but things change. You know,
like I understand, but, like, if we're never getting paid when a diamond comes, so we're going to call the 600,000 and never make another cent, it's just that's
I take a bit of issue with this framing, because there was a plan preflop that included a preflop all-in. Right?
Yes.
And then the flop came and we have to make a new assessment. And I don't think we should apply the same logic because that was our intention before.
Fair enough. You're right. You're right. That's not a good way to do it. I agree with you. Having said that, a diamond is both a wonderful card and it means we can never make any more unless he, you know, the board pairs and he beats us. Right.
We just have to play pure equity game now, and he's given us the price that makes it very nice.
He's giving us an amazing price. This is true. We can afford to call just with our straight turn equity only and not worry about it. Maybe that goes in. Maybe that's one of the reasons why she ultimately decides to call.
I actually like both decisions Maria has made so far. I think I get it. I think I'm there.
I think I get it too. I think I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you. We're moving into what I think is the most interesting. Well, what I think is the most interesting.
So far, it's been pretty interesting.
I mean, every street's fascinating.
The pot is now 6 million. Queen, Jack, 8, all diamonds. Maria has Ace, King with the Ace of Diamonds. Fedor has a set of queens.
Yeah.
The turn is the Deuce of Hearts, the nothingest of nothing cards possible.
I mean, it's a dream card for Fedor, considering a diamond has got to be bad.
Yeah. Ho checks. Now, in Fedor's mind, Maria could have a flush. We think, as Maria, Fedor could not have a flush, right?
Fedor, I'm going to give this one little piece away, but he says at one point in this hand out loud,
because
he gets the opportunity to speak a little bit, that he thinks the preflop, and this is before he knows what her hand is or anything, that the only diamonds she can have are Ace, King of Diamonds.
Yeah.
So one combo.
Right. Yeah.
So she can have a flush, but
right,
it's very unlikely, and he does have redraws against it.
But he literally can't from Maria's perspective.
From Maria's perspective, that's right. That's right. And maybe even from his own. Like, yeah. Like,
well,
what
no,
flush?
He could have the Ace of Diamonds.
With
the King, perhaps.
It doesn't shove pre. Mostly he's going to shove it.
Maybe he could have Ace 10 of Diamonds because he's in position.
Maybe. I doubt it, but maybe.
Anyway.
Okay.
Here we are. It's
here we are.
Deuce of Hearts. Maria does not improve. Fedor still has top set.
I mean, how does that feel for Maria? You're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. I'm going to have to fold a lot.
Yep.
So she checks.
Yeah.
Fedor bets 1.35 million.
This is the thing I don't understand. This is the thing the whole time I've wanted to talk about this decision.
You think he's supposed to shut out her equity now?
Yes. I think he's absolutely supposed to shove. He's got less than a pot-sized bet. This is what everyone does on the turn. They shut it out on the turn. Why would you give her... She called 600K. Now, he's trying to keep, I guess, what a set's going to call anyway, though. She has pocket eight. She's calling, right? She's not going to fucking fold a set, is she?
I think he's trying to keep ace-queen in there, if the remaining combos of ace-queen that exist, because in Fader's mind, Maria never has the naked ace of diamonds.
Right.
He doesn't think she has ace-king off.
Right. It's either she's already got you anyway.
Yeah.
And so what? Then it's going to be, you're getting it all in, and who cares on
the
turn one way or another. Or... She doesn't have a diamond anyway.
Yeah.
Essentially, so who cares?
If she has a diamond...
She could have 10-10 or 9-9.
Yeah, those are the diamonds that she could have, 9-9 or 10-10.
That's it.
Yeah. And she might just fold those for 1.35 million on the turn.
I think he believes that she will fold those hands on the turn for 1.35. Again, based on what he says very soon. What he's going to say.
Which means that... I mean,
it starts to make this bet make more sense.
Yeah, the only issue is you might end up missing out on value against sets below your set sometimes when a scary river card comes.
That's one thing. The other thing is we have to be right that she's really going to fold two nines, for example, with the nine of diamonds for $1.35 million when the pot is now, from her point of view, I mean, how big is this?
$7.3 million.
$7.3 million. I mean, she's getting 5 to 1. She's got a gutter. She's got a flush draw. It's not a super strong flush draw, but she can also knock down a lot of his hands where he has, as we were saying, he basically has no flushes himself. Yeah. So, I mean, it's hard for, I guess he can have ace queen with the ace of diamonds.
He could probably have tens with a 10 of diamonds as played too.
I don't know if he's going to bet it again.
Maybe not. He might not bet it again.
I don't think he's betting it again. I think because that's more of a semi-bluff. Yeah. Right? And why would you do that when you can just check and realize your equity and keep, there's not a lot of incentive for her to bluff the river with only $1.2 million in the side pot.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. Anyway. I was fully expecting watching this that he was going to just move in or effectively move in.
Yeah. There,
and she was going to have to fold. And I was like, Maria, you fucked the whole hand up.
Because she never has the naked ace of diamonds in his mind, I get the bet a bit more.
Right. That's the way it makes sense.
So that's what he does. He bets $1.35 million of his remaining stack.
Yep.
And now Maria's like, well, fuck, I guess I have to call. I mean, how can you fold? It's 1.35 million to win 7.3 million. It's 5 to 1.
And I have 12 outs for sure.
Yeah.
And maybe more, but 12 for sure.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess that's... No, we can say for sure because he never has a flush.
Right.
So if a no diamond, yeah, he does not have a flush right now. We're good.
He never even has a diamond in his hand.
It has to be like a weirdly played king with the king of diamonds.
Yes, yeah,
that's it.
Yeah,
or he's somehow playing ace king with the king of diamonds this way.
Sure,
but you wouldn't expect him to go bet with that. He might bet the flop, but he's often checking back the turn, I think, with that hand.
Right.
Same or bet, or at least moving it. Betting 1.35, you would never expect with that hand, which is dying for either a free card or all the fold that we can possibly muster. Nothing, not this weird in-between you're probably gonna, you might even call with all your
I don't know. Hands. It might be the same as the queens if we did the go through it, but we're not going to go through it
okay.
again. So she calls. Just because the odds are too good.
He forces her to call with this hand.
So I think what's happened for Maria so far all makes total sense. Pre-flop, she's trying to get fader to shove. She wants to play the high variance game. Post-flop, she's like, I just have to play pure equity because I don't have fold equity and he's giving me too good of a price.
On the turn, it really feels like she does not have fold equity. Like, I did not expect her to shove anymore on the turn.
No, definitely.
I thought she was going to fold and then he made it 1.35 and I'm like, is she going to call? I think she has to call.
She does.
So she does. And she does have to call.
And the pot is now 8.7 million.
Yes.
And Fedor, as the effective stack, has put in how much post flop? He's put in about 2 million.
Yeah, 2 million post flop.
So. So 4.4. he's at 3.1 million now.
He's at 2.3 million.
He is?
Kind of put in 2.4 million.
No, she put
1.6.
Yeah.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
That was my mistake.
I told you exactly what his effective stack was going into the flop. It was 5.1 million. He's put in 2 million.
I want to punch you.
I know.
Okay? Is that okay?
So he's got 3.1 million back.
Okay. So he's got like 40% of pot back, and he's got top set.
The river is the 10 of hearts.
Of course it is.
Maria makes the far more disguised strong hand.
It's the way better one to hit if you have to hit.
So,
oh, my God.
In Maria's head, she probably is like, I have the nuts, because Fedor does not have a flush.
I also think that's true, but I also think Maria can sit there and think to herself very comfortably, if by any weird way Federer has a flush, and it's hard to come up with a way. If he somehow does show up with the king 10 of diamonds.
Right. He's looser than you thought. Yeah.
Yeah, fine. It doesn't matter. He's got 40% of pot. Obviously, I'm never folding this hand for 40% of pot when it's hard to come up. The only combo is king 10 of diamonds. I don't think he can even have that. Like, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. It doesn't fucking matter. I'm never folding this fucking hand.
So she has to bet because a set might consider checking back.
Because why?
What is it? I guess it's only trying to get called by a weaker set at this point, right? What else?
Ace queen
is not
going to
call the river.
It'd have to be a very small bet.
Yeah,
a very small bet. Even then, it's probably going to tank fold, right?
Yeah,
it's going to be like you just have fucking tens or not tens. Sorry, jacks
or queens. Why not
queens? Because preflop. But
yeah,
since we see it's possible,
ace king of diamonds.
Right, ace king of diamonds. But yeah, so. I think she's got nothing to worry about here. And right. So the question is betting. Okay. If we were to check as Maria, let's just see, is Federer really going to find the check back with top fucking set where it's hard to give her ace king? It's just now a nine is a straight. Could she ever have two nines with a nine of diamonds? That'd be the other question.
It's that is still very hard for me to understand. Like, I don't know if she's going to continue on the turn with the nines and the tens with a diamond or not.
I don't know.
Those are the big question hands for me at this point.
Yeah. If she has nines, that means she can have tens. There's less combos. There's half the combos.
Yeah.
But she can have tens and can probably get some squeeze some value out of tens, right? A set of tens or a set of jacks? Are they really going to fold?
I don't know. What do you think?
Got there.
What do you think is better for Maria to do? To check or to try to make value herself?
Okay, Federer has been saying throughout the entire hand, I have a strong hand.
Yes.
We believed him.
Yes.
We didn't move in on the flop because we fucking believed him. And then he bet again on the turn, which is like, he's not fucking around.
Yeah, he really has a strong hand.
Yep.
But we know he doesn't have a flush.
We don't think he ever has a flush. We don't worry about it if he does, but he doesn't really have a flush. If we bet, can we? Okay. We have to really think about it. If we bet, what can we get called by? What are we targeting? We're targeting sets.
That's about it.
That's about it. Maybe ace queen, but it's got to be
free. Ace queen's going to fold.
It's going
to
fold.
If we just lead.
For us to go check, call, lead, it seems crazy to have that be a bluff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Okay. Okay. I'm with you. So, okay. So we're just trying to get called by sets, which didn't shove pre.
Yeah.
There's at least a few combos of queens, at least a few combos of jacks, and
eights maybe.
Eights seems reasonable.
Yeah.
He might sometimes just fold that, but he might not, especially with the winner-take-all nature of it. He may be like, I got to play, baby. I'm Federer Holtz. Let's go. I'm in position.
That's what he always says, because his name is Federer Holtz.
So he says that to himself.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm Federer Holtz. Because he's like the guy in that movie, which is, when I say that movie, I mean all those movies where the person wakes up and doesn't remember what their name is or who they are or why they're there, and they have to figure it out, and it turns out they're a killer.
Weekend at Bernie's.
That was a classic.
Yeah. They took a dead guy and they moved him around.
That's one of the few movies that everyone's heard of.
Yeah.
I've never seen, but I also can't name a single person who starred in it. And I can name, you name any of those movies from that era, I can probably do it. I can't do Weekend at Bernie's. I can picture Bernie. That's the best I can do.
I've seen Weekend at Bernie's a couple times.
Wow.
They were all while I was like in it, either like middle school or high school when I was homesick from school and it was on Comedy Central.
My best guess would be like Anthony Edwards, but that doesn't sound
right. He's not in that. Yeah, no, it's... He's too big for that.
Hey, man, they made it at least a weekend at Bernie's, too. I know that.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Matthew, the guy from the John Hughes movie with Molly Ringwald and John Cryer.
Yeah, you're right.
That guy.
The guy.
It's him.
The guy with the dark hair. Right? You're thinking of the guy with the dark hair?
Yeah.
Because there's a guy with the dark hair and the guy with more blonde hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't mean the guy with the blonde hair.
Yeah.
I want to look it up, but I'm not going to. We're gonna keep going.
No spoilers about Weekend at Bernie's and who's in it.
Let's stay with the hand. A lot's going on. So I don't know if Maria really needs to bet or not. If she can only get called by... she can only get called by sets, we think? Or if we bet 1.2 million or... Shoving feels like we can only get called by sets.
I mean, we also have to ask if Federer's going to bet his sets. Because we did slightly touch on that.
Yeah.
I started with Maria's got a bet, but maybe Federer would bet his sets anyway.
These guys are really good at thin value. A nine is a straight, and when we bet again, Maria's going to be like, you don't really ever have nines, but Ace King got there, but it's hard for you to have Ace King. But if she has a set of jacks, she's capable of making big time folds. Like, I've seen her do it on the show. She does it a bunch. It's impressive. Yeah. She plays so well on the show. It really opened my eyes to her. Is he really not going to bet top set if she checks? Like, let's talk about his actual hand, this actual situation. If she checks, he's really not going to bet top set of queens when she has to have 9-9 or ace king basically to beat her? Or two weird diamonds that seem impossible for her to have except ace king of diamonds, which she played very weird?
Yeah, I don't know. But like, checking and betting both seem weird here as Maria.
Yeah.
I'm concerned both ways that we're not going to get the value that we are.
I would wonder with 40% of stack if we can just sort of like force a call from like worse hands.
Yeah, just make sure some money goes in. Like let's go back to basic principles. Let's just make sure to put some money in when we think we have the best hand.
I was talking about from Federer's point of view.
Oh. I'm thinking about this from Maria's point of view now.
Right. He's definitely got a strong hand. So betting can't be that bad.
Well, she's going to bet, and she does something interesting. She does not shove.
I know.
She bets 1.8 of his 3.1 million.
I mean, wow.
I think this is designed to make it look like she could have a weaker, very strong hand. Because it's clear at this point that both players have very strong hands to get this far.
By the way, Kaina is sitting here with her ace four of hearts. And this hand's already taken a while. It's going to take a lot longer in a second. But it's already taken a while. And she just has to sit there and act like maybe she can win this pot. You know, not do anything. And she's doing... She's really soldiering through this hand, and it's taking a while because this is such a big
game. Yeah, she's a true pro because, you know, everybody's been there in tournaments where there's an all-in player and they're like, it's very clear that they don't have like one of the key cards in the hand.
Of course.
Right. And it's like, come on, man. Just like, I know it sucks to bust a tournament, but you have to, this is part of the deal.
Yeah.
But almost nobody actually stays stone. I stay stone-faced.
I do too.
Yeah.
But like, she does a great job with that. Yeah. So I want to give her some flowers. That. But let's get back to, so Maria decides to bet.
Yeah, she bets 1.8 million. And as it's I was saying,
fine, but what bluffs do we have?
Well, we can get to that in a second.
Okay.
But what I think she's trying to do is she's trying to choose a size that Fader will call with a hand like queens or jacks because she could possibly have a set of eights when she chooses this size. You know, that's my best guess as to why she's not going all in.
Yeah. If we're really just targeting sets, feel like there's a reasonable chance the sets are going to shove anyway if we check. Even eights, I think there's a reasonable chance they're going to shove.
I don't think Fader's going to shove eights. I don't expect...
He could go after hands like ace-ace and king-king now pretty beautifully.
Yeah, I guess if they have a diamond, they have to call.
For 40% of pot? I don't know. I don't know if he's... I mean, I'm not saying it's an easy call for those hands, but he can target them. I don't know. Maybe he finds a check anyway. Maybe he says it's not worth it. But it's so hard to... And maybe the fact that a nine is a straight, maybe he's afraid he's going to fold out too much of the stuff that could call him if he's got two eights in his hand. Maybe he just checks it back. But is that true for jacks? Harder with jacks where a set of eights is sitting right there.
I don't know. I mean, like, I can't blame...
Set of tens, by the way.
It's easy to find fault in what Maria is doing on the river here because I think everything looks kind of bad in the end. I guess checking... If Fader checks back, looks terrible.
It doesn't look terrible. It looks like how you would assume it's incredible. If he's got a strong enough hand that he's been betting and he could call a big bet, you assume he could bet it himself most of the time. I think he'd be able to bet queens here, but I'm not sure because the 10 is a great card for her, obviously, but also a little bit weird because there are straights now that exist.
Anyway, this is what happens. Let's talk about Fader's spot. It's 1.8 million to call. The pot is freaking a billion. It's it's 10.5 million in the pot.
And it,
1.8 million to call, but Fader is not happy about the spot. He is tanking and he talks a lot while he's tanking.
Yeah, he uses like a lot of his gold chips, I think a lot of his gold coins, which are time extensions, which no one's really been doing in this game, but he uses a bunch of them. And he, like you said, he's talking and kind of just sitting there in between the two of them, keeping it together.
Yeah.
Well, and Fader is going through the value and the bluffs.
Right. And he basically starts with like, there's just no bluffs. There's no bluffs. What can I be? What could you turn into a bluff? Ace jack? You can't have ace jack because you don't have ace jack off preflop.
Right.
Ace jack suited, you're folding on the flop. He says that.
I mean, ace jack suited isn't a problem for him anyway. Right.
No, but he's saying hands that you could turn into bluffs for whatever reason. He's trying to, because he said no bluffs make sense. So what are hands you could get here with you turn into bluffs? Right. And he's saying like, he's just going through it, you know.
It's so hard for her to play ace jack suited, like to suddenly put out 1.8.
Yeah, anyway. That's what he said.
Yeah, yeah.
And she wouldn't be here anyway.
If she got here, even if she decided to somehow make the call on the turn, which I don't think she would. I agree.
He thinks she wouldn't have made the call on the flop.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
But let's even say, though, she gets here with ace jack suited somehow. Yeah. She goes call, and he's wrong. Her leading suddenly with ace jack seems bizarre.
Yeah.
As a bluff.
It does. But he's
but she's never calling the turn with ace jack.
He's just doing his thought process of like, what are possible bluffs? Because it's really hard to think of what a possible bluff
is. It is.
Because he's not.
Nigh impossible.
Because he's thinking that she never has the naked ace of diamonds. Because, like, how could she have the naked ace of diamonds and call? Like ace queen, I guess, but
that's his one. That's the one he comes up with. Yeah. He says ace queen with the ace of diamonds. I guess.
But why would you bet that?
It's really weird to turn that into a bluff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he says like, okay, and then he's trying to come up with value.
He says ace king of diamonds.
Right.
But he doesn't think she has any ace king off.
Zero ace king off.
Yeah.
He's eliminated that.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
Right.
Yes. And then if you're Fedor, I can understand where you're like, okay, is she ever betting a set for value? Almost as a blocking bet slash get some value for my set bet kind of a thing against a hand that is clearly good. Like if Maria has, let's say for a second, Maria actually has jacks instead, right?
Yeah.
She could, right? And play it just like this. She might bet a little bit for A, for value, and B, to block him shoving.
Right.
She gets lots of good things happen there.
Yeah.
If she's beat, she pays less because I assume she's calling. I think she's calling. If she's ahead, she might get called by a set of eights or a set of tens. Like, there's some good things that happen here.
Yeah. Yeah. That's most of what Fedor says. My thoughts on this are, it's quite possible that he has the second best hand in his distribution after ace-king of diamonds. Like, he knows that he can have queens, which means he knows that he can probably have ace-king. I would assume that they're similar in his mind and sometimes play similarly. So I don't think he has ace-10 of diamonds. We talked about that earlier. So this is literally the second best hand in his distribution, unless he has nines.
Seems hard to believe he's going to bet nines on the turn.
Yeah.
I don't believe he's betting nines on the turn.
Intrinsic in this is that because he is so sure Maria doesn't have ace king off, I assume he doesn't have ace king off here. I think he's not.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes so much sense for him to be going for the shove pre-flop with ace king off because he gets to have that all-in thing like Maria is sort of trying to induce. He gets to have the fold equity, but he also gets the let's get it all-in equity and see who fucking wins, and one of us is probably going to win the whole thing then.
It's such a weird spot because he's getting an incredible price.
Incredible.
He has maybe the second best hand in his entire distribution, although would it be better to have ace-queen with the ace of diamonds? It might be. If he thinks ace-king of diamonds is a possible value hand for Maria.
It's one combo.
Yeah, but you remove, maybe in Fedor's mind, the only value combo that makes sense.
If she's not betting sets for 1.8 million, which she might be because it's so cheap. She didn't shove. By the way, shoving is only 40% of pot.
Right.
This is like, what, 18% of pot, 16% of pot? Like, it's a very small
bet. It's like 24% of pot.
It's 1.8 into how much?
8.7.
No, 9. Oh, no, you're right, 8.7. Okay, you're right. It's like 22% of pot. Okay, fine. But it's not the shove, right? Oh, man.
See, it's a stupid, weird spot.
It's a super bizarro spot. There is a metagame aspect at least a little bit here, too, right? Got to be a tiny bit of metagame, too, which is $456,000, a lot of money and all that. But Fedor plays against the biggest people in the world in these insanely
They're very tall. They're huge.
In some ways, this is its own unique little spot, for sure. Folding this hand, people knowing that you can fold this hand for this price against really, really, against the best players in the world, which is who he plays against, problematic.
Maybe.
I'm not saying that should influence his decision hugely, but that should be like at least a tiny thread of a weight to put on the scale.
Thread of a weight.
Yeah.
I like that.
Thank you.
Maybe. I think the price is just too good and is too confusing of a situation to ever fold with this price in this hand.
It's insane to fold. I'm going to go a step further and just say I think it would be insane to fold, even though he thinks for so long that it looks like he might actually fold.
And he uses gold time extensions, which is not just using a time extension. That loses that takes up some equity in the game, doesn't it?
It does not. They're just time extensions at this point. They weren't up until the final table.
Okay. Oh, because it affects how many blinds you get.
Yeah.
But then you're already there.
Yeah.
All right. So it's just time extensions.
So it's just time extensions. This is a good time to use it.
Yeah.
He is so like, he knows he's probably beat here, right? Which makes sense. He's getting an unbelievable price to call. There's 10.5 million. It costs him 1.8. His price is insane, right? So he doesn't have to be right very often for this to be a good call at all. He's got to be right like 18% of the time. Right?
Yeah. It's a pretty big difference in playability of stack though, if he thinks he's usually losing.
Correct, but if you win,
yeah, I know
you're gonna have all the chips, man, and your Fedor Holtz, which means you are a really big favorite compared to everybody else.
Because so much has gone on in this hand, we've kind of brushed over one thing that we often talk about, which is how incredibly difficult it is for Maria to actually have a bluff here.
Yes, that's the thing. Maria said something. So can we talk about what actually happens? And then, because I want to talk about that. Okay, so Fedor calls.
And he is visibly upset when he sees her hand because he did not expect that hand and he's like mad at her for having it, basically.
It may be that. He might be mad at himself for not including it in her range.
Maybe.
We don't really know. So Maria says later on, like, because they do interviews about this hand, not surprisingly. She says, it shows that he respects me because it means he thinks I can have some bluffs. And I was sitting there thinking, I don't know if I believe that explanation.
Yeah.
Like, I think he thinks you might bet sets for value and the price is really good and there just aren't that many hands you can have.
Yeah.
It's really hard for her to have a bluff. I don't see any bluffs at all from Maria here.
The only natural bluff is the ace of diamonds. Yep. And
it's got to be with a queen, right?
Right, which why would you bluff that hand?
You don't have to bluff it at all. And you don't think for $1.8 million you're getting this better hand to fold. Like, it's hard to actually... Like, when you're actually sitting in the seat with ace, queen, with the ace of diamonds, you're like, oh my God, I think I'm beat on the turn when you call. He bet again, I think I'm beat. But he's only got 40% of stack left, and a 10 of not diamonds comes off on the river. You don't think, like, oh, I'll bet fucking 22% of the pot and get him to fold now. Like... Even though Fader then goes into this whole long thing about it, you wouldn't think as Maria that's going to work enough.
No, you wouldn't.
It's just not a plausible thing to do. You're like, he's strong. It's not a scary enough card to get him to fold. He's never going to give me ace-king. He's not going to give me pocket nines very much. He's not folding is what I would be. So you're just not going to try. And why would you turn top into a bluff anyway when it's a good bluff catcher? Again, he's not bluffing either, though. It's fucking weird.
Beyond all of the... like hard data about this hand, if you go past that, based on all the stuff that you just said, it makes sense why Fader would tank so long despite all of the hard data.
I agree.
It makes sense. Like, it's just...
You could just do the other thing where you're like, you could just know where you're going to end up and not think for a long time. You could decide to do that. Now, Fader thinks enough and deeply enough that maybe that's not true for him, but I'm reminded of my friend Russell, who final table of the main event back in the day. He lost one time to a set, and he was talking to John... He had a set and he lost, I'm sorry, where they got all in on the flop with like middle set and he lost the top set. And it was in a big spot in a tournament, whatever. And he was talking to John Juwando about it later and he said, John, do you ever fold my hand in that spot? And John said, I think for a very, very long time. And Russell said, and he said, and I never fold. So to me, I'm like, if that's the case, you could also just not think for a very long time, you know? I mean, maybe with time extensions, that changes it a little bit and people think a little bit less in those spots. But maybe Fader really seems to think, is legitimately thinking about it, in fairness to him.
Maybe in Juwanda's mind, it was more like, I think for a really long time, and so far I haven't folded, but maybe one of these days I'll actually pull that trigger. You know,
didn't seem like that's where he's coming from when the story was told to me, but I was not there.
Anyway, cool hand.
Unbelievable hand. Every single street has interesting decisions.
Yeah. Thank you, Game of Gold, for this gift.
There were so many great hands from Game of Gold. We're going to do a bunch more, because a bunch more have been suggested. I'm looking forward to them. This is probably the showiest, most interesting of all of them, though.
I assume they're going to do another season of Game of Gold with the success that they've had.
I mean, I assume they've had success. I know I'm super into it. And people, all the players on Twitter, like Poker Twitter loves it. I don't know what kind of viewership they're really getting.
As of now, which is 4 days after this episode was released, it has 270K views. So pretty good, but not like amazing.
Pretty good. But
in the poker world, that's
pretty
great,
strong. Yeah.
But, you know, it's
That's like a solid Doug Polk video from back in the day. Yeah. Though. You know, it's not, which is good.
Yeah.
But I don't know. If I'm GG and I put the $10 million or $5 million into making this show.
But this is like...
Might be hoping for a little
This is
more.
Like evergreen. You know, like it's going to get a lot more views, right? Like how many people were watching High Stakes Poker Season 3 in 2019 on YouTube, right? Like,
right.
It's going to be like that.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
And it's a new thing that they've created, this hybrid reality poker show.
Yeah.
With weird games. And wait till you see. There's They play one game, which is very unusual and not what I expected them to play. With a lot on the line, and the players will have to go like strategize because they don't know how to play this game in the same way that they do all these other games. It's pretty interesting.
Cool.
It's not Hold'em for one of them. So they're doing really interesting stuff with it, and I think they're building a brand with this, and we're going to see many more seasons of this.
It's really cool because I've mentioned this a few times on the podcast, so the hardcores will know. Probably the nerdiest thing about me is my wife and I still watch the show Survivor. Which
I don't know if that's nerdy. That's just very mid and bourgeois.
It's mid. It's bourgeois when I was too busy on mid. How is it bourgeois?
I mean, you know.
Anyway, the point is, as a person who plays poker and thinks about game theory a lot, I'm often offended almost by like how bad at game theory the contestants are when it is a game that has a lot of like exploitative moments that you could do really cool game theory stuff and everybody's just being a fucking idiot, like a football team who doesn't tank, you know? And this is interesting because it's got reality show elements and unknown elements like reality shows often have, but you're bringing in some of the best game theory experts in the world to play this game.
Yes.
Which makes it so that they will actually do a good job at the reality show elements of it too, which I don't think any other reality show has.
And when someone makes a mistake like that on this show, like a game theory mistake, even with outside of the poker, because there's other decisions that have to be made within these teams, the other players point it out.
Yeah. They're
like, oh, yeah, no, there's huge value if you do this instead of this. You mess that up,
yeah.
You know? And people get really upset about it and stuff, too, where they realize they screw up. There's going to be a future episode where one of the players is going to realize that they made a mistake in round two, and they're going to be furious. And they actually take it out on their teammates, which is weird, honestly, and doesn't look good. But they're furious about it and feel like maybe they've been played, although they really agree to everything, and they sort of mess themselves up. But, like, that kind of stuff happens. It's a great show. I'm really excited for more.
Yeah, cool. Good for GG. They did something good in the world.
They really did.
Hey. First time, no rehearsal. I say fuck the second take. Night is baby scratching them vinyls until the record break. Mr. One Night is all I need. No second.